Good boy. All right.
Nani.
Oh, hey, Jason.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. I didn't know you were back in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. Had a pretty amazing trip. I mean, it was unreal.
Really? I can't wait to hear about it.
No, I have, like, a lot to tell you.
What is it?
Come on. Do you remember the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, people were talking about getting piercings and getting tribal tattoos.
Yeah.
And people were singing about saving the planet and forming bands.
Yeah.
There's a place where that idea still exists as a reality, and I've been there.
Where is it?
Portland.
Oregon?
Yeah. Dream of the 90s is alive. Portland, Portland, Portland. The dream of the 90s is alive. Portland, Portland. Tattoo ink never runs dry. Remember when people were content to be unambitious, sleep till 11, just hang out with their friends? I mean, they had no occupations whatsoever, maybe working a couple hours a week at a coffee shop.
Right. That died out a long time ago.
Not in Portland. Portland is a city where young people go to retire. Dream of the 90s is alive, Portland. All the hot girls wear glasses.
Yeah.
Remember in the 90s when they encouraged you to be weird? It was just an amazing time where people would go to see something like the Jim Rose Sideshow Circus and watch someone hang something from their penis. You could grow up to want to be a clown. Like, people went to clown school.
I gave up clowning years ago.
Well, in Portland, you don't have to.
Dream of the 90s is alive, Portland.
Sleep till 11.
You'll be in heaven.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland.
The dream is alive.
So from what I can surmise, from what you're positing, it's like Portland's almost an alternative universe. It's like Gore One. The Bush administration never happened.
Exactly.
Portland, it's almost like cars don't exist, right?
Yes.
They ride bikes or double-decker bikes. They ride unicycles. Yes. They ride the tram. They ride skateboards.
Yes. Portland, you can go to like a record store and sell your CDs.
Turn that dirty cloud frown right upside down.
In Portland, you can put a bird on something and just call it art.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland, Portland, Portland. The dream of the 90s.
I made it.
Yeah, you're a little late.
Sorry.
You're also a little San Francisco right now, if you know what I mean. Try to. Sorry. Much better. Welcome to Portland.
Thank you.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland, 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 Portland.
You're Jimmy, right? This is your house?
Sure is.
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems. I'm hungry. Let's get a taco.
You just gotta keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
What was that again?
I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god, not the god, I don't think.
All those innocent contractors brought in to do the job were killed. Casualties of a war they had nothing to do with.
They want a 45. The killer had a 45. They want a 45.
You're so money and you don't even know it.
That's what I keep trying to tell you. So money.
Could you not mess with me right now?
Show me.
First rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
And like that, he's gone.
He will save you.
Guys.
what they actually called cock rock.
Right. Such a giant goddamn turnaround from that Chris Cornell song when I first heard it in the Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
I don't want a guy singing to me unless it's Tom Jones.
Right.
And now I've played it 6 times on my iPhone.
That is such a fucking good song.
The lyrics are really fucking good.
Well, and it's so...
Did he write those lyrics?
I don't know. Probably.
They seemed a little too clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's well, no Rain and Ice picks on my steel shoulder.
They don't mention dogs... Or
cages, or apparently his ex-wife.
Yeah,
he had a whole like.
So it's probably not his work. Yeah, who knows? Have you seen or heard of Portlandia, the show on
ice? I have seen the promos for it.
The dream of the song from the first one is the dream of the '90s is alive in Portland. And yeah, the whole thing where Fred Armistead's talking, it's like, you remember what it was like in the 90s when it's like you'd form a band with somebody and you didn't know how to play, but you still got into a band? Yeah, that's still in Portland.
Remember when you were Jay Maskus and you were in Dinosaur Jr. and even though you could really play guitar, you played like you didn't?
Yep. Remember back when Kurt Cobain was named Guitar Player Magazine's Guitarist of the Year?
Yeah. He was?
I think so. That was a time when it was inescapable, you know? Which probably cheesed Stone Gossard off to no end.
Probably not. It's the other guy.
Yeah.
McCleary.
Yeah.
McCluey. McClowney. McClue. Whatever fuck his name is.
Leo McCrary. That's the guy from The Prisoner.
Abe Vigoda. Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda was probably really upset by that.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember so clearly when Smells Like Teen Spirit hit. Because it was like one day... All this hair was really fucking cool. And then the next day it was like, what?
I didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
At all. They were like, hey, this song changed everything.
What?
But I own punk rock.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's what's weird is it didn't add anything new to the game. It just kind of...
Nothing against it.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize the game had changed.
Yeah.
Okay. I was still on tour with Cinderella. At the time.
Well, see, I remember living in San Antonio. San Antonio's a place where the Scorpions could still play 2 gigs a year and sell it out.
Still do,
yeah. Well, I don't know if they're still doing it, but they could.
They could, yeah. Jeff Leppard's coming.
With
Heart.
San Antonio, man, that is... The dream of the 80s is alive in San Antonio.
They're in Corpus.
San Antonio is on fucking Slayer time.
Yes.
Where every time it hits 1989... You just reset that shit back to 1984.
Exactly.
And just, bam, right back to
We're here.
Right. The 90s, I remember kind of getting into it, you know, because it was weird hitting the age that we were in the 90s, because we were both hit 15 in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, a year later, 1991 or so, was when the grunge thing hit. And how cool is it that right when MTV and Rolling Stone are marketed towards high school kids, but they pretend... Like, it's marketed towards college kids. They're not, but that's what they pretend.
Do they?
Yeah,
still pretend?
Well, at least back when we were coming of age, they tried to make it seem like... And then you hit college and you watch it and you're like, this is not... What the hell?
Awful.
Yeah, this is not for us. But it's kind of making kids think that that's what's really cool. And the fact that as I was hitting it, I was there for, like, the birth of this movement. And, like, it's for me. And the day I realized that The Emperor Had No Clothes was when Rolling Stone gave Sleeps With Angels, Neil Young's album, Sleeps With Angels, 5 stars. It was the first time I'd ever seen a 5-star review. I bought the album, sat down and listened to it, and then when it hit the song Piece of Crap, I was like, yes, it is.
Did you know, as a strange aside on Neil Young, that he made a noise record?
No.
A straight-up noise record.
What's it called?
I don't remember.
Rust Makes Noise?
Maybe.
But, yeah, that was when I started to realize that maybe...
After the noise rush.
Nice. Harvest Rust?
Yes.
Okay. But that was about the time that I started really guessing that there was something up, that it was a little bit of bullshit. But then Mirror Ball came out. That was a good fucking record.
That was a good
record. That was a damn good record. I was like, wow, okay, maybe not. But then Pearl Jam, like, because to me, the grunge thing was centered around Pearl Jam.
See, that was the band that got me into all that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That and Alice in Chains.
Yeah, Alice in Chains a little
box.
Bit. Yeah,
But they came out before that, so I still consider them just kind of an alternative metal band.
Yes,
Like Super Mega OK from Soundgarden, a metal band from Seattle. They're on SST Records.
Yeah.
I had a shitload of SST records. Like vinyl records. So it was like, oh, they're just another SST band.
Right.
And then I never paid much attention to Nirvana because I'm small town. Sorry, we didn't get the smoke signal till late.
Oh man, that
but
hit like
Pearl
a
Jam
truck.
Came on, and I was like, "Oh, I can get into this."
Yeah,
and my older friends, obviously, I have a lot. My friends are very older, and they're like, "Oh, this band sucks."
Right.
That was the you know them versus me thing.
It was kind of a go to bed old man mentality.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was like, "No, this is good shit, and this is my stuff. These are our guys."
Yeah, And I mean, and that again, it's that youthful—the first time that you were ever being directly marketed towards—and
it worked.
And it worked. And then, and it wasn't like you know Van Halen. I love Van Halen, but that was always my older sister's music that I was co-opting. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I found Sam's 1984 tape. And it was like, Oh yeah.
And then. But this came out, like, I remember feeling cool because I'm like, no, Alive's not their best song. I love Even Flow. That was the shit for me. And then you listen to it and it's like, Black is so fucking
Porch.
Good. Then Go hit, Versus hit.
Versus.
That album was fucking monster. That was so good.
Remember when that fucking first single, back when they still had singles, and that, for that kind of music, and Animal hit in high school, on the radio, and I was like, I gotta get to the record store.
Yeah. Yup. Yep, and then Vitalogy happened,
and
there was some really
was
good
some
shit
good
on
stuff.
Vitalogy.
The
Vitalogy was definitely you had to sort the wheat from the chaff on
Corduroy.
That,
there was some really good shit.
Better Man,
yep.
Things like, but then it kind of went away from me
last
for a while.
Exit or Next Exit,
Last Exit.
Anyway, there's some good shit on there, but it's not. It didn't have the same luster.
But then I didn't hear a song of theirs until where can my baby be?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was like
written by a guy from Woodsboro, Texas, right down the road from Refugio, Texas.
Wow, nice. But the grunge shit I dug, and that defines it for me. And it's for people who weren't there or who came along at the tail end. I hate feeling like that. Well, you weren't at Woodstock, so you don't know. Blah blah blah. You know that kind of. Old expert guys like, no, you don't understand what it was like when it hit. But so I don't do that.
They probably do understand.
Yeah.
They just weren't buying as many flannel shirts.
Oh, I still have most of my flannel shirts from back in those days. And you knew me. I owned a lot of fucking flannel shirts.
You and me both, man.
Yeah, a lot, baby.
I wore a cap backwards.
Oh.
Had the undercut hair. Remember when I had long hair?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was the guy who wore the,
I was into it.
I wore the flannel...
In Texas, we really wanted it.
Oh, yeah. I was the guy who wore the denim shorts with long johns on underneath and Doc Martens.
Yeah,
but I took it, man. I took it further. I didn't put laces on my Docs.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Oh, yeah. Not unlaced.
Didn't care.
No laces.
You're not going to be held down by those bougie laces.
Yeah, bougie.
Yeah.
Who needs that shit? But that was our childhood. I mean, that was the sort of the soundtrack of our friendship evolving, as it were.
You didn't date a chick unless you wore Jesus Built My Hot Rod Ministry shirt.
Yeah.
You knew the chicks that were it that you were good for. Like,
yeah.
Cure? Ministry chick.
Oh, Bad Religion
awesome.
Chick.
Awesome. Like Jane's Addiction too?
Yeah.
Of course I couldn't get enough of
back
in those days.
Yeah. That stuff was the business, man. And
hanging out with the smokers.
Yeah. Smokers. And then you hit... What's weird for me is that was also about the time that the Chili Peppers were taken off.
And I'd been listening to them before all that.
Oh, yeah, you were a long time. And I stand by, I think that my favorite Chili Peppers song was never on a Chili Peppers album. It was on the Coneheads soundtrack. Soul to Squeeze.
Oh, Soul to Squeeze.
That is such a fucking great song. That is such a good song. Although, I got to say, Blood Sugar Sex Magic lost me a little bit because I loved Mother's Milk so much. And it was that Anthony Kiedis was getting a little too Anthony Kiedis.
Yeah, I was really into that band for a time there between like 13 and 15.
Yeah.
And Uplift, Muffle, Party Plan.
Nice.
And then Mother's Milk, because it was all... Like,
Johnny!
It was around the skater kind of thing and all that.
Yeah,
me and my friend Jake Carter were really, really into Chili Peppers. And we sent a friend of ours, who was old enough to buy Blood Sugar Sex Magik, to
Corpus. Because it had the label.
That's right.
Oh.
And he came back with this bevy of... Chili Pepper tapes or that new record. We were sold down the river on that thing.
Nice.
I bought the video. I mean, it was ugly.
And what's funny is that those
shaved our heads.
Those pictures that I put on Facebook are us from that time frame.
Yeah.
Of the bobblehead Jim and pretty boy Floyd Campbell.
I'm saying,
oh my God! My mom was always like, he was always such a cute little boy. Now he's so big and like, yeah, but
Nancy.
You're not as pretty as you used to be.
Yeah. Speak for yourself.
I'm not as pretty as I used to. I'm going to fucking cut my own head off right now. If I'm not as pretty as I was in those pictures. Like in bobblehead Nick Cave. Hey! Hi! My body can barely support the weight of my massive skull and my Harry Potter glasses.
You're a wizard, Jimmy.
Let me tell you what an asshole I was. Those fucking roundy glasses I bought because they were part of the John Lennon collection. Yep, because that's what you did back then when, you got into the Beatles and you understood John Lennon. You got him. No one did. He was kind of a... I don't know. I'm a little more of a Ringo man now. I appreciate Ringo Starr a lot. Have you seen the footage of...
I like his cover. I think it's a cover. No song? No, I don't smoke it no more.
Wow.
I'm tired of waking up on the floor. No, thank you, please. It only makes me sneeze. And then I find it hard to find the door.
Wow. I got to find that. Shit.
I just blew your mind.
You did. Have you seen the footage of Larry King interviewing Paul and Ringo? And Larry accidentally confused Ringo with George for a second.
Oh.
And Paul got pissed. And Ringo was like, no, it's okay. He's like, no, it's not okay.
That's not okay at all.
Yeah, I mean, Ringo was like, that's not a big deal. And apparently Paul, because we forget that, they were friends as little kids, And that's, hold on. 12 minutes into it and I do my level check. Paul was, took umbrage with, no, you don't insult my fucking friend like that.
Yeah.
And that I kind of dig a little bit, because Ringo was like, oh, no, it's an honest mistake. And Paul was like, no, Ringo, that's not cool.
That's not cool.
Yeah, not at all. Shit. But if you really look
That's not cool at all.
Yeah. The 90s. What? Now, it's weird because there was a lot, if you look at it, across the board, there was a lot of really cool shit going on in the 90s.
Yeah.
There really was. Musically, fucking television, you had Friends and the X-Files happening at the same time. I mean, you had some cool shit going down at that time. And movies went batshit.
Yes, they did.
And it started, tail end of the 80s. But 90s is when it just hit and took off.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into, to me, one name comes to my mind when you mention 90s. One name. Quentin.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he only put out 3 movies in the 90s, what a 3 movies, What a fucking triplet to put out.
Yep.
I mean, shit. But then you also, I look at that and it's, Austin is such a big part of the 90s for me. Not only because I moved here, but Linklater Slacker, which I'm not a fan of. I've never been a fan of Slacker.
Yeah, me either.
But it's cool to watch because you see so much of Austin in it. You see that is my sister's Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Austin I caught the tail end of when I moved here.
We were there for the aftershock.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The drag was still kind of cool, and Tower Records was where it's at, and Metro Coffee Shop was still called Insomnia.
Quackenbushes.
Quackenbushes was still there. And it just...
Remember, can you possibly conceive of a time now...
Uh-huh.
Where you wanted to go to the drag to a coffee shop.
Shit, no. I can't wrap my head around that. Even though Metro is still there, it's just... And there was that that kind of... It closed right when I moved there. I can't remember what it's called, but it had a French name. And it's now the Starbucks that's behind that Tower Records.
Well,
but it was this really cool... You'd have the peasant's lunch where it's bread and cheese and coffee. It was supposed to be... But it was cool. I mean, that was... Yeah. And now you look at it, and it's like, what the hell? You know, Liberty Lunch,
yeah,
gone, replaced with condos, like multi-million dollar condos.
I saw about, everybody saw a whole lot more shows there, but the shows I saw at Liberty were just
incredible.
Epic.
Yeah.
Winning.
I mean, winning. Duh. That's back when you could see, like, you know, Fishbone on a stage 3 feet off the ground with 50 people in the room.
Saw Helmet there.
Jesus. I missed awesome. That show. My sister saw Blues Traveler there, and that's where the classic line, I don't want to listen to some fat guy play harmonica for an hour straight.
You picked the wrong shoe.
Well, and it was, you know, you dug them. They're like, oh, yeah, great. But you didn't realize that a 2.5 hour show would have 5 songs in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Jammed.
There was that. We had that whole, like, rock revival thing with grunge, which really worshipped the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that stuff. So you got, if you weren't already a fan of it, you really got in tune to all that.
Right.
And then by the time we got to college,
yep,
everything turned, like, second wave of hippie.
Yeah.
Dave Matthews and...
Keep on saying now, hey.
Blues Traveler and the cursed and... Evil Rusted Root.
Oh, check this out. Oh. I went to see Little Sister was like the big deal band in Austin at the time. And we went to see him once. The lead singer was sick. Mm-hmm. And fucking Bob Schneider sat in for her when he was just known as the guy who sings for the ugly Americans.
Or Joe Rockhead at Cafe on the Square in San Marcos.
Yes.
Joe Rocket.
David Garza at Cactus Cafe.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing stuff. My sister did...
Seed?
Oh, God.
Proceed?
Do you remember Soak?
Yeah.
Hang out? I'm friends with their lead singer.
They used to play at Lucy's Retired Surfer Bar, Blind Surfer Bar, Retarded Transgender Surfer Bar, whatever it was called.
Something like that.
They played there all the time.
My sister did a lot of photography for bands. I don't know if you knew the band, if you'd ever heard of the band Javelin Boot.
Yeah.
Julie did the most of the photography for their album For Those About to Pop. Yeah. But she was in with a lot of those folks, did a lot of photographs and things like that. But that...
Retarded it, Elf.
Retarded... My friend Amber was married to their drummer.
What?
Sugar, yeah, the percussionist. Wow. Yes, he was a good guy. I like that.
And Austin's own. Push Monkey.
God. It's...
Lead singer stole my cigarettes. And Mario hit on his wife.
Oh, that's classy. That, you know, that is winning.
Or the guitar player's wife.
Duh.
Winning.
Winning. But that was like... the 90s, it's so hard to put a name to it. Because that's where our tastes were shaped then. In a great deal. I mean, the seeds were sown earlier... But the 90s is when we became what the statuesque males that we are to this day.
Yeah, that was. You think about those times where you're just constantly morphing into this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
Just trying to find yourself.
Exactly.
I remember high school, like when I was still in Refurio, massively into grunge, and all that.
Uh-huh.
More so in Eagle Pass, and then as that Hell on Earth twisted me into more death metal and all that, and what will become black metal and all that, and it was just, you know. Got to be heavier, got to be faster, black and leather, I don't care.
Yes, yes.
And then college, I remember making a conscious decision, the friends I have here don't want to hear the shit.
Yeah.
No one's going to relate to it. You're all by yourself. Either be pissed off and by yourself listening to this god-awful noise.
Yeah.
Or try to make an effort.
Yeah.
To be cool, man. I remember that, clearly. And I went and I bought... Dave Matthews CD. Okay, here's the rest of the story.
I owned a couple of those.
I bought that CD at Sundance Records in San Marcos.
Oh, Sundance.
I brought it back up to the dorm.
Oh, the dorm.
My friend Mike Moore lived across the hall, and he had a friend named Chad. Chad borrowed that CD the same day that I bought it, and I never had it again.
Wow.
And I didn't care.
Nice.
But I said, universe, hey.
There it is.
Hey.
You tried.
I tried. I played in a little guitar band in a coffee shop in the square. I did my best. I'm sensitive.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I would kill for right now?
Damn it.
A recording of us doing Plush together.
Because
I played the ass off of that on the acoustic.
You sure did. I'm pretty sure that my singing was ass. So it worked out.
Yeah. I got my guitar down on that perfect. And but, you know, it was Plush. Who gives a shit? But movies, I really... This is where my like became a love Mm-hmm. You know, and because I was forging my own tastes. I was going totally into my own realm, and mm-hmm. there were movies that were being made for me.
By the way, that hippie thing,
yeah,
didn't take.
Oh, God, no. So, oh, no.
Blind melon, that guy... I'm only human.
Okay, dude.
I can't do it, okay? I can't do it.
When I was in high school, I saw Blind Melon...
Where's my Celtic Frost records?
Open for Alice in Chains, open for Ozzy Osbourne in San Antonio. Blind Melon replacing Motorhead on the bill. Blind Melon, Alice in Chains, Lane Staley in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And then Ozzy with young Zakk Wylde just destroying it. On his farewell...
Picks Wheels? Any Picks Wheels? No.
No. Wait, Pig Squeals. You mean the
Pig Squeals.
The harmonics? Oh, yeah. He's all over the fucking place.
I was just
yeah.
curious if that would be one of those.
Yeah, it was always on that. But Ozzy, that was on Ozzy's final tour, the No More Tours tour, his retirement tour.
Yeah.
Where, you know when he stopped touring?
Yeah.
And doesn't do it anymore back in 1996?
I remember he retired and that record being very good. And I thought, wow, that's really good that he... retired and had a really good record. Not retired, retard.
Apparently. Retard, yeah.
And that was good.
And he came out with that album that had Perry Mason on it. Who do we want on the case?
Remember
Perry Mason.
Hearing that song the first time? Maybe you didn't have the same experience, but I was driving with my friend Mike in San Marcos and the riff came on. And we didn't hear the intro. All we heard was the riff. Like, whoa, this is heavy as balls. And then he started singing about Perry Mason.
What? Yeah.
Huh.
This is curious.
So. Okay.
All right, then. I remember buying Joe Satriani's album, The Extremist, in San Marcos when we were there for the camp.
Mm.
And just sitting in a room listening, going, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And I still love Satch, so...
Eric Johnson Records.
Oh, Jesus.
Michael at the Dover.
Goddamn. 90s, man.
Yeah, man.
It's so weird because it's hard to not go in depth into any of this because it's like 90s music. I could talk about that shit all night.
Well, these things were, especially at that age...
Yeah.
Talk about defined you.
Oh, hell
you
yeah.
You defined yourself.
Yeah.
And compared yourself to other people by what they are into and what they watched.
What you like is as important as what you are like.
More so at that age than any age after that.
Yeah,
now I could give a shit, really.
Yeah.
Then?
Ooh. That was when I got my first job at West Telemarketing, which for a kid paid $5 an hour plus commissions, which was decent. So I was... But I had no expenses, you know?
Yeah.
And gas was dirt cheap back then.
Yeah.
So I was like, shit, I spent all my money at Sound Warehouse. I bought so many fucking CDs. My first paycheck, the first paycheck I ever got from a job, I went and I bought the Eric Clapton Crossroads CD box set.
Hmm.
And you remember how bad I marked out to Clapton at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I just sat there and listened to that shit.
You're going to mark out to somebody.
Yeah, you could do worse. If I had a dollar for every time I listened to Bell Bottom Blues back then, sure. I would be a wealthy man. Ugh.
You didn't mark out to like Joe King Carrasco. So that's good.
Yeah. Could have marked out to Danzig.
No. Guilty.
Yeah.
Guilty!
Fucking Danzig.
Hell yeah. Weebo!
Matt the Bayman!
I'm not proud of it, but it is what it is.
Yes. So, when we talk film in the 90s, what is it that really grabs you? What defines 90s film?
Well, I like we were saying earlier, so many of those things defined... who we were, or what we watched defined us.
Yeah.
And around that time, a little bit in college, was Clerks.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I remember being in that exact situation.
Right.
With the exact kind of conversations.
Uh-huh.
In the same shitty jobs, in your same shitty life. And it was like, oh, this movie's directed squarely at me and people like me.
Yeah. Actually, man, odd as...
But then, Tarantino and all that.
I had a Clerks moment when I was, 29. That is the reason I am where I am right now. And you will remember this. I worked at... Erica and me, I lost the job at Dell, sold the house I was living in, renting a place with Erica. We decided to go our separate ways, and I'm living with a friend of mine. And I go and I get a job at First Federal Comics just for something to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm standing there by myself, alone in this store. I was making, $55,000-$60,000 a year, and now I'm getting like $5 an hour at this right. comic book store. I look around, I go, I've got to fucking do something. And I called UT from that place and was like, so what do I got to do for, you know, blah, 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 teaching certification.
Mm-hmm.
That started me doing all that. Within a few months, I was back at UT finishing my degree, and it was just sitting there. And I think that part of it was, you know, Clerks 2 was not yet even an idea.
Right.
But I kind of looked at it, and I...
Pleasantly
I,
so.
Yeah, I was like, God, am I going to be... You know, what have I become? What am I now?
Right.
You know, and it was just sort of a wake-up call. And I looked at it, I was like, do I really want to be, you know, Dante?
No, no.
Working at this place forever? Do I want to be Randall? No. Nope. I want to do something. And then, like, the comic store caught fire. The comic store didn't catch fire. The beauty salon next to it did. And I was in there... like helping clean shit out, empty it, carrying stuff, and I'm like, I am busting my ass moving heavy shit because I'm the only odd comic book guys aren't that strong.
Huh.
I'm moving everything, and I'm like, I'm getting paid $5 an hour to do this. It's the same I'm getting fucking just above minimum wage. It's the same I was getting paid when I was 16 year old.
Yeah.
This isn't gonna work anymore.
Yeah.
And it changed shit, and a lot of it was I was looking at Clerks like. Yeah, that's a really cool kind of fuck the world attitude to have when you're, you know, 19, 20. That's when you have it. But when you're 29, it's like, I've got to figure some shit out. I've got to do something.
Yeah, well, that attitude is likened to, you know, fat guys laughing at marathon runners.
Yes, exactly.
And you're like, look at those assholes doing things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're, yeah. They are.
Yes, they are. That's precisely what they're doing.
So
although, cool. If I had to put it for Kevin Smith, though, at that time, of all his stuff, the thing that I think really nails the idea of the 90s of his movies, Slacker kind of, Mallrats kind of, but Amy.
Chasing Amy.
And that's the movie about him that frustrates me the most, mm-hmm. because that's the definitive proof that, yeah, I am a good filmmaker. I am a great writer and a great filmmaker.
Exactly.
And I want to know what happened to that guy. You know, I want to know where he went. But, yeah. You know, shit, things happen, man.
I mean, what can you do about it?
You could have kept on keeping on and maybe just fought your way through it, Kevin.
Yeah, not pitched a fit and made an ass out of yourself.
I don't know. What do I know? He's got it on me. You know, he got his movies made, and he's a writer that can actually organize his thoughts and get it done. So
yeah,
it just makes it more frustrating because it was so damn good.
Yes, uh-huh. But actually, if we really, the aesthetic, at least from a, I don't know, an entrepreneurial effort, work ethic standpoint, I think El Mariachi defines a lot of the 90s for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the birth of that first do-it-yourself when it was hard to do-it-yourself. Now, shooting a movie, it's not simple, but it's a damn sight easier than it was 15 years ago. I mean, the expense, and what's funny is I read the book Spike, Mike, Slackers, and Dykes, and he talks about the $7,000 film, El Mariachi. And he was like, yeah, that was a $7,000 VHS print.
Yeah.
You blow that up to 35 millimeter, it's going to cost X amount just to do that. It's going to be like $30,000 to do that. So, yeah, the production to finish it was $7,000, but that was trumpet. That was sexied up a lot.
Yeah.
That was sexied up a lot. But, I mean, think about it. Does anything define at least Austin more than I'm going to go test medicine on myself at Pharmaco?
At Pharmaco. I did Pharmaco.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How was it? Were you in a residential where you lived there?
Yeah, I lived there for 2 weeks.
Yeah?
Yeah, no shit.
How much you make off of it?
I made $1,500.
Wow.
I bought my first electric, well, not my first, my first new electric guitar and amp with that money.
Nice.
You know, how fucking late 90s Austin night could you be?
Yeah.
I'm going to Pharmaco to get tested on. To buy a guitar and amp for my band, man.
What did you test?
It was a white blood cell count. It's for cancer medication.
Okay.
It shot your white blood cell count through the roof.
Uh-huh.
So it's whoever got the medicine, of course, and others got placebo. And apparently, the side effects could be like swollen joints and headaches and all these terrible things that could happen. I never had that, but some people did. Maybe I got the sugar. I don't know.
Who knows, yeah.
But I remember the Red Wings won their first championship and forever.
Right.
and I approved that I was a Red Wings fan before all this crap.
Uh-huh.
Fuck the haters. And I was by myself watching that championship game in the day room of the Pharmaco. Yeah. It was pretty boring, actually.
It seems like it would be because it's like, what, you don't even get to leave during the day, do you?
No, you had one hour out in the yard where you walked around the building, basically, just to get a little exercise to make sure that stuff coursed through your veins. And then I spent the rest of the day usually in this other room in the back. It was one of the bunk rooms that no one lived in, no one was staying in. And I just took my acoustic guitar with me, and I was back there badly writing songs and reading and just fucking around.
Right.
And playing on an old Nintendo system.
Jesus.
And that was your day for 2 weeks.
Wow. So it's like getting paid to be in jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty much. Without the rough love.
But this was actually, what's weird to me about the, well, not weird about the 90s, but the big deal in the 90s was that kind of birth of the surprise twist ending became so huge then. Because that was where you got, you know, Fight Club, Sixth Sense, Blair Witch, and my favorite of those, Usual Suspects. That was the first movie I saw in Austin, my first date in Austin. I was 20 years old, she was 24, and I felt like I was the coolest thing that ever happened to this planet. Because I'd been in Austin less than a week, and I got a date with this broad, and I was like, yeah. And it was awesome. But it's so
Dobie. There's some 90s slice. Oh,
and it's gone now.
That's a crime.
Yeah. I remember I saw Swingers in the Dobie like four times.
Yep.
It was amazing. It stayed there forever. I took like three different dates to it.
A date there.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was wonderful to be able to say I saw that and Bottle Rocket in the theater. Mm. You know, like if I ever
met Alligator there, Blair Witch,
I saw Blair Witch there too. I saw Orgasmo there. I saw Cannibal the Musical there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And those were all the birth of South Park coming out of the 90s. Mm-hmm. And boy, hard to believe South Park's been on the air for like 15 years.
Yeah, I remember that was like a whisper at the coffee shop. I worked at the coffee shop end of a Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nonfiction managers, where the fuck they are, was like, have you seen this Christmas skit?
I heard about that. I heard rumor about that. Like, oh, God, that sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
And it was like, you can watch it on the internet. I was like,
what?
I don't have the technology to watch a thing from the internet. I'm not a spaceman.
Mm-mm.
I'm not from the future.
My television still had a dial.
Yeah. I ain't brought my flying shoes with me. Yeah, that the way that shit hit. But it's funny because in doing this, I put together a list of not just the top 10 movies of the 90s in general, but for each year.
Okay.
And here it is. Let's walk through the top 10. I want to go 10 to 1 from the 90s across the board.
Okay.
Okay. Number 10 movie of the 90s. Any guesses?
No.
Armageddon. $553 million.
Wow.
Number 9, Men in Black. $589 million.
I remember that.
Number 8, The Lost World, Jurassic Park. $618 million. That thing was unwatchable. The Sixth Sense, then. $672 million. The next one is number 6 was a movie that I remember being in the theater with you and you seeing a poster for it and almost pissing your pants laughing at the image of Tom Hanks sitting on a park bench.
Ah.
Forrest Gump. Just pissing your, oh God. $677 million. Followed up by The Lion King, which I preferred more when it was called Hamlet.
Yes.
It's $783 million.
Little known, Claudius, his name was actually Scar.
Scar, yes. Independence Day, $817 million.
I saw it. I was in a bad way.
I saw it. Oh God. So funny story on this. I saw it at the old Westgate Mall back when it was still a mall.
Oh yeah,
yeah, an indoor
absolutely
mall. Now here's what was awkward about it. I worked at Blockbuster Video. My friend
Treasure Tracks and Tracks. Treasures and Tracks was there.
Yes. My friend Shalon got me a gig at Blockbuster on South Lamar.
What's that?
My friend Shalon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you said Shalon.
No, Shalon. Yeah. She got me a job at the Blockbuster South Lamar Manchac, where I was Employee of the Month 3 months in a row. Thank
bully
you very
for you,
much.
Bully.
Yes. But I was dating her roommate when she got me the job there. And then we broke up. And like 3 or 4 days after we broke up, all of us, everyone that worked there, her and her roommate went and saw Independence Day at the theater. So I'm sitting there, like, two seats down from this ex of mine, just like, I am kind of miserable right now. I am kind of miserable.
I wish I had my independence.
Yeah. Yep. Next up, Jurassic Park. $914 million.
Scared shitless.
Yep. Yep. You think you were scared shitless before? Number two. Guess what number two of the 90s, of the entire 1990s was?
Mad Dog and Glory.
Yes, Mad Dog and Glory starring Bill Murray and Uma Thurman.
No.
No. Episode one.
Yeah.
$924 million.
That's right.
And you should be able to pick off the number one movie of the 90s. With $1.8 billion, double what Star Wars Episode I made.
Titanic.
Which I didn't love. Well, no, fuck that. I marked out to it the first time I saw it, like everyone did. The first time you saw it, there was a little... And then after that, you were like...
I did. That was actually the birth. Titanic. Uh-huh. Maybe the birth of my... my heelish, contrarian, I'm not going to see that because that's some big Hollywood bullshit thing.
Right.
Where I just avoided it. And finally saw it like 6 months after the fervor had gone down. And
Urban fervor.
Like, mm-hmm. Eh.
Meh.
Whatever.
Whatevs.
Smoke my cigarette in disdain. Now I can look back and go, hey, way to go, Titanic. Thanks for financing all those other films.
Yeah. Yes.
Way to go, Jimmy. Way to make that money.
Way to go, Jimmy. Good job, Jimmy.
Good job, Jimmy.
Apparently, Rambo First Blood... No, First Blood Part 2, Rambo. Cameron did one of the scripts. Jimmy Cameron was a writer on that.
Awesome.
Eat your life, Jimmy. Now, you want to just... Let's do a little walk through
Meander,
the 90s real
we?
Quick. Yeah. Let's walk through the 90s a little bit. 1990, just the top 10 grosses. Mm-hmm. Number 10 was Kindergarten Cop. Number 9 was
the... Not going to say the line.
Not a tumor. Oh, so I'm talking to my nephew William, who's 4. Mm-hmm. I mean, just yeah, 4. Maybe yeah, he's 4. They had a cat named Josephine, who they found out was really a boy named Winston. I said, so
how did they find out his name was Winston?
They asked him. He's very chatty.
yeah. Where's my head today? Yes.
And I said, so I hear that you have a cat named Winston. He goes, yeah, Josephine had a penis. I said, what? Yeah, he had a penis, not a pachina.
A pachina.
I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing.
As cute as a bug's ear.
It is. But, so, not a pachina. Number 9. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Number 8, Presumed Innocent. Number 7, Die Hard 2. Number 6, Back to the Future 3.
Yeah.
5, Total Recall. 4, The Jetsons Movie.
Ooh.
Yeah. $424 million.
Jetsons Movie.
Followed up by Pretty Woman, because prostitution is romantic. Home Alone. Yeah. Number 1 movie of 1990 at $500 million. Ghost. Which I have not seen.
You like it, Orlando? It's Autumn Sunrise.
I've not seen it. And this was the year that... Listen to these Oscars. Supporting actress Whoopi Goldberg. Supporting actor Joe Pesci. For what should have won Best Picture that year. Actress Kathy Bates. Actor Jeremy Irons. Yes. For Dungeons and Dragons. Best director Costner. Best film Dances with Wolves.
Okay.
That's weird. 92, shall we walk
Do you
through?
Think the Academy looks back at that now and just goes, oh, God, I shouldn't have slept with that girl.
Yeah. Woke up with a case of the herp saying, what the balls was I thinking?
Kicking bird.
Now, next we have City Slicker in 92. Oh, 1900, fucking City Slicker. 1992. Did I skip 91? I guess I skipped... 1991. This is 1991. Oh. City Slickers, Hot Shots, Cape Fear. Number 7, Adam's Family. Number 6, JFK.
Really?
Was the number 6 grossing movie that year.
That's some fun drunk movie watching right there.
Silence of the Lambs was 5.
Only?
Hook was 4.
Ooh!
Beauty and the Beast was 3.
Thank you for believing.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, 2. And number 1, Terminator 2, The Judgment Day.
Well, thanks, Cameron, again, for saving us.
Making a quarter of what Titanic made. Yeah. So, and that was the year Silence of the Lambs won everything except for Jack Palance and Mercedes Rule for The Fisher King, which I still haven't seen. And I don't really have much interest in seeing The Fisher King. No offense.
It's okay. You know, I liked it a whole lot more then than I do now.
Yeah.
But it's a good little movie. I don't think it deserved any
accolades.
Not on that level, no.
Yeah. Now, let's look at 90.
Actually, it does get an award for Terry Gilliam for making a movie that people want to see.
Yeah, which is against his ethos.
Boom.
Boom, baby. Number 10 is one of the first movies. Is a movie we drove to Corpus to see.
Bill and Ted? Wayne's World?
It was a flavor of ice cream.
He would pralines and dick.
Wayne's World, followed by your favorite movie, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Followed by your second favorite movie, Sister Act, at number 8. A Few Good Men was number 7.
Okay.
Followed by Batman Returns, a movie that I have not seen and have no interest in seeing.
Batman sets a guy on fire.
Although it does have, I was listening to this podcast, spoiler alert, where they were talking about like Valentine's Day movies, and they mentioned one of them mentioned West Side Story, and the joke came out, and this is something that's going to happen when one of us dies. It's going to be Maria over his body. Don't you touch him! And then I'm going to insist on having like either a gang of toughs or a gang of penguins walk your body off. Well, don't you touch him!
Of course.
How many bullets, Nicole? How many bullets does it take? And the only thing is, I'm more believable as a Puerto Rican than Natalie Wood.
That's true.
Number 5 was Lethal Weapon 3. Number 4 was Sharon Stone's Vagina. I mean, Basic Instinct.
That movie sucked.
I never saw it.
It sucked.
I heard there's boobies and vagina in it.
I saw it with a girlfriend of mine at the time who was such a fucking mark for, you look how powerful women are. Not by using the kind of smarts that Sharon Stone's character did, but like sexuality and guile.
Yeah.
But for some reason thought she was a fucking UFC fighter. God knows. You're like, look how powerful she is. Like, oh, yeah, the fucking clock is ticking on you, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Number 3 was Home Alone 2, followed by The Bodyguard, and number 1, Aladdin. Huh. And this was Unforgiven, winning a bunch of stuff. I'm still not a big Unforgiven fan.
It was a slow year.
Yeah. Howard's End. Emma Thompson winning an Oscar. Marissa Tomei.
The title of a gay porn.
And of course, now I know y'all think you got a lot of honor in here. That's my Al Pacino right there.
Oh.
Now, you really must be. What?
What are you talking about?
Al
are you
Pacino having a stroke? Wins himself an Oscar.
Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah!
Now, you get killed walking your doggy.
That was terrible.
Wet spot underneath your chair. Now we get 93. Top grossing Pelican Brief number 10.
Yep.
The nonstop laugh riot freight train that is Philadelphia at 9. Have you seen the Family Guy where they talk about going to see Philadelphia and Peter's like, oh, Tom Hanks, he's so funny. Everything he says is gold. I have AIDS. See everything. Hilarious. Followed by fucking Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Still haven't seen.
You're not missing
the
thing.
Yeah. Indecent Proposal.
Not missing the thing.
Another gay porn, The Firm. There it is.
I saw that in Del Rio. I skipped school.
Uh-huh.
Not to go see The Firm. Just driving around. Let's go to Del Rio and see a movie. And we wind up seeing The Firm.
I read The Firm.
Me too.
But because everyone did. Because John...
it was witchcraft.
Yeah.
You have to read this.
And then you get it and you're like, what? It has a bookmark in it?
Yeah.
What?
Wow. Red Stripe. That sounds exotic.
All the John Grisham books, I remember they had that little flap that you'd pull the bookmark out of on the back of it. I was like, this is and I read all of them, and they just got better and better until I stopped and said, bunch of boring lawyer crap.
Yeah.
Schindler's List was number 4, which a movie of that length pulling in that much cash. Wow.
They made you.
Yeah.
They made you go.
I've seen it all the way through once. On television. Yes. Number three, The Fugitive.
I love that movie.
So do I. Although watching it off the big screen, the special effects are terrible.
Yes, they are.
Him jumping off the train looks like something that would be on Raiders of the Hidden Temple on Nickelodeon. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Two is Doubtfire. One, Jurassic Park.
Really?
Yeah, Mrs. Doubtfire was the second highest grossing movie in
1993. Wow.
Oscars were Schindler's List, Philadelphia, The Piano, and The Fugitive. Tommy Lee Jones.
I didn't kill my wife. Tommy Lee. I don't care.
That was the bet. I don't care. That was the bomb from that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, then we go to the next year, which was 1994. The year I finished high school.
Yes.
Clear and Present Danger 10.
The year I got out.
Yes. Interview with the Vampire 9. Four Weddings and a Funeral was the eighth highest grossing movie that year.
Wow.
Dumb and Dumber was 7. Number 6.
Hilarious.
The touching and poignant look at family dynamics that was the Flintstones was number 6.
Give me a minute.
Yeah. $341 million. I wish you could see what I'm seeing right now, folks. I think I just broke Campbell. Where Rosie O'Donnell played Betty Rubble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Worst casting in the history of the world.
Well, when she played that fucking...
Dominatrix in that fucking movie. Yeah. Yeah.
See you in your nightmares.
5 was Speed.
Oh, yeah.
Remember 4, that. The Mask. 3, True Lies. Good work, Jimmy. 2... Park Bench, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Forrest Gump.
Find your feather.
Find your feather. Jesus.
Fucking find your throat, you...
Wow. And number 1 was The Lion King. And, of course, Forrest Gump was all over the place. And Jessica Lange won an Oscar that year. That was the year I couldn't watch the Oscars because I was in the first act 1, scene 2 of Twelfth Night. And we did a rehearsal that night. Every other night, we had a television in the green room. I played the sea captain.
Ah.
Yes. We had a TV in the green room, and the director that night, I don't want you guys being able to watch television, and you're going to be here for the whole rehearsal. The Oscars are on. Don't care. That was the Dave Letterman year. That was Quentin Tarantino winning. Uma. I haven't seen any
Oprah.
Of it. Yeah. I haven't seen any of it. Had no idea who won what, other than the fact that...
How the fuck... Is that a crime for theater people?
It kind of is, yeah. Oh, Martin Landau and Diane Wiest won. This was one of the years that I handicapped perfectly and got every single one of the Oscars right that year.
Landau deserved every bit of that.
Yes,
shit.
He did.
Polish Titan!
This is the first of 4 years in a row where I got 100% of the Oscars right.
Awesome. Yeah. I've never got it right. Ever.
Well, it's because I don't vote with what I want to win. I vote with what's going to win.
I just... Yeah.
Okay, 95. Top grossing movies of that year. Jumanji at 10.
Oh, God.
Number 9 was Waterworld.
Huh.
Casper, the friendly little boy down the street at number 8.
That's no longer alive.
Number 7, apropos, 7.
I marked out that flick.
I saw that on the most depressing double feature ever. Ever. Clockers and 7. Riverside Theater. We drove home, passed by the Major Brands gas station.
Oh, yeah.
Saw a body covered in a sheet.
Hmm.
And then went to Denny's, and we all sat there unable to, just not wanting to eat. We just sat there like...
No moons over my hammy for you that day.
No grand slammage. I don't even know what that means, but... Yeah.
That needs to happen.
The grand slam it.
That needs to happen. Someone at Denny's just sat up.
Goes, oh, hello.
I've got an idea.
The grand slam it.
A dead body.
Well, I'll be honest. Eating off a dead body is kind of a wash when it comes to eating it at Denny's. Sort of 6 of one, half a dozen of the other.
That's right.
Next up, Batman Forever. What's the 6th highest grossing film that... That thing was
garbage. So that with Nicole, her friend Brady,
Brophy, Charles Bronson. I remember. And Doug, her friend Doug.
You went from Brody to Doug?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't remember his name. Sure. Brady? I think it's Brady.
I'll go with that.
Whatever. We saw it in the biggest damn theater that I've ever been in. And we sat down there with a giant thing of popcorn, and Nicole and I were like, all right, great. Oh, what a nightmare that was.
That's my favorite line in any comic book movie ever. Boiling acid! What difference does it make how hot it is? What? That? And how do you know it's acid? How do you know it's not just boiling water? That would be just as fucked up.
That'd be bad. It would hurt. Oh, it would sting a bit.
It would hurt more. Tommy Lee Jones' character pissed me off in that, but not as much as Debbie Mazar and Drew Barrymore as his two girlfriends. The pointlessness of that. The stupid, stupid, stupid pointlessness. Follow that up with a movie I've never seen.
What's that?
Pocahontas.
Me neither.
It's go one better, though. Number four, GoldenEye. That was a good fucking movie.
For England, James.
Yes. Three, Apollo 13.
Hmm?
Two, Toy Story. And number one, Die Hard with a Vengeance was the highest grossing flick that year. And this was the year of the greatest Academy Awards ever.
Die Hard 3 was a good time.
It was. It was. This was the year that, okay, Mira Sorvino and Kevin Spacey won the supportings. Sarandon and Cage won the mains.
Yeah.
Picture and director? Freedom.
Ah, yeah.
Braveheart. Yep.
Oh, former boy. Man,
I fucking love that movie so much. Now, I freeze time in a bottle on that. I put, you know, pork chops in a bottle on that one, son. No moving forward.
So
awesome.
Fucking fantastic.
And what I love is if you look at the ratings board information on Braveheart, it says rated R for brutal medieval warfare. That is so rad.
That's awesome.
That is so fucking rad. I love that movie so much.
It is delicious.
Now, the year of our Lord, 1996, see some shit that I didn't care for. Well, I never saw Eraser.
So,
didn't it have rail guns in it or some shit?
I don't think I saw it either.
Number nine was Jerry Maguire?
Ugh.
The Nutty Professor at 8.
Ugh.
Seven, Ransom. I liked it. I liked it once. Huh?
Only saw it once.
Yeah, I dug it a lot.
I don't remember.
101 Dalmatians?
Hmm.
Okay. Hunchback of Notre Dame at 5. At 4, The Rock. Welcome, Mr. Bay. Make yourself at home.
Sure.
3, Mission Impossible.
I enjoyed it.
I enjoy the first one a lot. I enjoy the third one a lot. Second one.
Have you ever seen the third one? Second one is a nightmare.
The third one's cool, man.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
I hear good things.
God,
I really
like
the first one. People give that movie a lot of shit.
But I really enjoyed it. Yeah. The pacing was great. The story was cool. I liked it.
Not necessarily an Apollo flick, but you can feel his hand.
Yeah. Twister at number 2.
Again, I was in a bad way the first time I saw that. Yeah. By myself in a theater and had no one to react to.
I was on a really awesome first date when that happened.
I was like, hey, man, did you see that cow, man?
But I will say, the first date was then ruined by the number one movie because that's the girl that I was dating that broke up with me right before Independence Day.
Oh.
Which I saw opening day in a theater mall next to an Orange Julius that was so low budget that it was Lemon Julius because they weren't going to sing enough money to buy oranges.
Orange drink Julius.
Yeah, orange drink. It was like potato Julius.
It was beet Julius.
Beet Julius. Grapefruit
Turnip
Julius. Corn Julius.
Corn Julius.
I can't stop thinking of things. Like
no, I can't think. Corn Nut Julius.
Corn Nut Julius. Oh, man.
Salsa picante, please.
No, it was made of quote-unquote Orange Julius is what it was. You know there's an Orange Julius out at Lakeline Mall?
What?
Yes! What? There's a fucking Orange Julius at Lakeline Mall.
We have to go to Lakeline Mall now.
And it's tied onto an Auntie Annie's pretzel so you can get a pretzel-wrapped hot dog.
Finally!
That's winning.
That is winning.
That is Vatican assassin sorcerer warlock right there.
Winning.
Yeah, I've got magical powers. That includes napping. And this was the year the English Patient just stormed, which I still haven't seen.
Good.
I don't care. Cuba Gooding Jr. made an ass out of himself. Frances McDormand was kind of dour and uncool accepting her Best Actress award.
Yeah, she's too cool for school.
And Jeffrey Rush. I like Jeffrey Rush.
Sure.
I do. He seems like a cool guy to hang out with. Then we go, of course, to 1997, where all kinds of hell broke loose. Number 10, The Full Monty. Number 9, No. Corbett? What is that? What is that? Fifth Element.
Really?
Goodwill Hunting at number 8.
Huh.
Seven Liar... Oh, and Liar at number 7. I remember with a slightly tricksterish friend of ours, former friend, coming to... laughing at me for saying I like Goodwill Hunting because that's how cool he was. He
just, yeah.
Fucking prick.
I enjoyed that film.
It's good.
Very much.
I don't give a shit when anyone says that's a good fucking movie. Number 6 was As Good As It Gets.
I enjoyed that movie very much.
Air Force One.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
And then a movie where the wheels started coming off when Tomorrow Never Died. Men in Black. The Lost Word Jurassic Park at number 2. And what was number 1 in 1997?
Jackie Brown.
Yes. Titanic. That was the year Goodwill Hunting won all those awards, as well as L.A. Confidential and As Good As It Gets. L.A. Confidential is so fucking good. I don't even want to get started on that. Okay, we're in the last 2 years in the 90s for just our rundown. 98. Number 10 was Lethal Weapon 4. Number 9?
Oh, Lethal Weapon 4.
A favorite of yours.
One of the worst endings in any action movie ever in the history of action movie ever.
Yeah, yeah. Jet Li losing to Mel Gibson and...
No,
not even that.
You're the very end of the movie.
Oh, we're...
We're family!
Yeah.
They kill me.
Break the urine cup.
God.
As per Jewish tradition, breaking a urine cup. Number 9, a movie you like even more. Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, God.
Shakespeare in Love. Do you remember seeing that in the theater and loving it? Do you remember just sitting there and being enamored with it and just... Everyone else is going to be exposed to my love of Shakespeare. Because Gwyneth Paltrow is going to be bland and show her nipples, and everyone's going to love that.
Movies.
I just want to see how far I can twist the knife. I just want to see if I can cause another embolism here.
The movie's an abomination. There, said it.
Was it as good as Dr. Doolittle? And number 8? Is Eddie Murphy just checked out? Like, seriously. Just
hey, man. Yeah. That property didn't pay for itself.
Exactly. Then Mulan, followed by Deep Impact at number 6. A Bug's Life at 5, Something About Mary at 4. Number 3 was one of the few movies I've ever fallen asleep in the theater during. Godzilla.
Never saw it.
Fell asleep in the theater. Saving Private Ryan at number 2. And number 1, Armageddon.
Armageddon.
This was the year of Affliction and Life is Beautiful and Shakespeare in Love and Private Ryan. Shakespeare in Love winning Best Picture, which really devalued the Best Picture award for me a lot.
Yeah, that's a kick square in the nuts.
The newts, man, just ripped them apart. That blew my Oscar poll apart because I was like, wait a minute.
Of course it did. No one expected that.
Yeah.
No one said, I think the crap on a stick will win. You had a better shot than fucking Shakespeare in Love.
Yep.
All right, I'm done.
Next up. Now, here we are, 1999. This is what took us out.
Fuck it now.
This is what took us out. Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Which, by the time I saw that in the theater, it had been ruined for me, and I don't think it would have been that funny to begin with.
Not really, no.
Number 9, oh, wow. This year hates you. This fucking year hates you.
Me?
1999 hates you. Number 9...
As a matter of fact, it did.
American Beauty.
It's a nightmare.
Number 8, The World Is Not Enough.
Garbage.
Number 7, Notting Hill.
Shit.
Number 6, The Mummy.
God awful.
Number 5, Tarzan.
Hated it.
Number 4, The Matrix.
I enjoyed it.
Yes. 3, Toy Story. Mm. 2, The Sixth Sense. And number 1, The fucking Phantom Menace. And this was the
Fight
year...
Club come out. Was that
Yes, 98? Fight Club did come out in 99. Yeah, this was the year that American Beauty, Boys Don't Cry, Cider House Rules won all the Oscars. So now that we've talked through all that, none of these movies at all... there may be, of all of those films we just named, Oscars and grossing... I don't think many of those represent the 90s for me. Very few of them do.
Oh, Fight Club. I don't look at that looking at the 90s.
Yeah,
my foot was already out the door of the 90s.
Yeah.
I saw that thing. Fuck.
It was right at the end of the 90s. Yeah, that was right. I was managing that Lakeline Theater, so I saw it a whole bunch there. But like the 90s, I would pull in movies like Trainspotting and Pulp Fiction and Singles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Singles to me, that's the epitome of the 90s.
That was a big
That soundtrack to me is soundtrack in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
That was also when we got Goodfellas.
Nightmare Before Christmas in 93.
Yes. Swingers, The Professional, and Hard Boiled came out that year.
Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross in 92.
Oh, God, yes. True Romance.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ. That, my sister told me about that. My sister used to have this way of telling me about movies by giving me a moment-to-moment breakdown of everything in them.
Oh.
And I kind of stopped her on that. I'm like, no, I don't want to hear about this. But that's also where you got shit like Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, 2 Days in the Valley, and Suicide Kings, where it's like, we're going to try and be Tarantino. Paul Thomas Anderson actually started off trying to cop Tarantino a little bit. Have you seen Sydney or Hard Eight? Whatever they call it. There is a speech about matches in that that is, I haven't written. This is where the cool monologue came in. The 90s gave birth to the cool short monologue.
Right.
Where John C. Reilly gives this speech about, I never carry matches. What? No, I never have matches on me. Really? Why not? I was waiting in line somewhere once and a pack of matches went off in my pocket. But it was basically, I don't tip. But I don't carry matches in its stead.
There was a kind of a rash of those things after Tarantino hit.
Yeah.
Like Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Yeah.
There's another example, but it's a little fluttering out of my brain at the
moment. Right, right.
Anyway, there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
But the 90s is such a curious decade for me because you've got such a mix of the cool, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I remember seeing that thing and just being knocked backwards by it. Like, this is the coolest shit. Quiz Show. Oh, my God. So smart. So quiet.
Very good.
I think what I'm worried about is now there's this rash of, like, 80s nostalgia stuff. What's it going to be like when we have the 90s nostalgia? Ugh. You know, God. Like, A Hot Tub Time Machine for the 90s or Take Me Home Tonight for the 90s. And then we'll honestly be able to look at it and go, what?
Yeah.
No. No.
No, thank you.
Out of Sight.
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
Casino in 95.
Oh, Casino.
And fucking Rushmore in 98.
Yes, Rushmore and...
Again, by that time, I really wasn't thinking 90s.
Yeah.
I guess because I had to, like, pay my own way and shit, so right. I didn't really care.
Yeah.
But it was still a big deal.
You also had... Magnolia and Boogie Nights.
Mm-hmm.
Magnolia, I saw that once in the theater, and there were sequences in that were absolutely amazing. There were sequences.
There were parts in that which were really, really awesome.
The coincidental nature of it, because if you think about the number of odd coincidences that happen in life, us getting back together, us coming back to talking after years of just not seeing each other.
One night stand.
Yeah. And you were living a mile away from me.
Yeah.
You were living, whenever I'd go to the grocery store, I would look at your complex and go, it'd be kind of cool to live there because you just walk through that hole in the fence and you're at the grocery store.
And then we did to buy beer. Mm-hmm. And you went to buy a giant party platter.
A party platter, yes. And the party platter that you looked at me and I looked at you and said, I don't know why.
That's all right.
It's weird because the 90s and 2000s blend together for me a lot because I keep wanting to say things like, Boondock Saints.
Miller's Crossing in 90.
Oh, Miller's Crossing. I keep thinking like, Boondock Saints. No, that was later.
Groundhog Gay.
Groundhog Gay?
Gay.
Yes.
Groundhog Gay.
Groundhog Gay. It's
a different movie.
Have you seen that somebody did a compressed timeline where it's like, okay, let's look at how long it would take, how much real time passed for that character in Groundhog Day for Bill Murray's character, and they analyzed it. Somebody said, for this to have happened, it's this, you can assume this many days for this, this many days for this, and he calculated it out. It's like, figure probably 35 years. Because then you look at shit like playing the piano, ice sculpture, all of that shit, like that would take a long goddamn time, wouldn't it? All right.
That's cool.
What shit do you have? Oh, Train Spotting.
Oh, things that...
Heroin.
You know, Heat.
Oh, Heat.
Name of the Father. Those were big things. Dazed and Confused. That
I just kind of, you were there and got swept up in the typhoon, in the tidal wave of Dazed and Confused, and it's Austin Hipness.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I saw it so many times that you finally come off of it, and I never need to see that movie again.
I've only seen it like once or twice. It's
that and Friday.
Oh, fucking Friday.
It was like, hey, if you're in a certain state, there are only two movies in the entire universe that you can watch. And one of them is Dazed and Confused, and the other is Friday. There are no other films. They do not exist.
Yes.
Except maybe Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams, because it's my favorite of theirs.
I was working at that Blockbuster around the time Friday was taking off, and it was funny because that was where you learned the differences in Blockbusters, because looking in the system, it's like our Blockbuster had two copies of Friday. Riverside Blockbuster had 50. You know, like, damn. And they were all out all the time.
That's also around the same time where, even though it had come out earlier in the 90s, my friend Sam and I got into a situation where anytime we got blitz drunk, he especially would put on Last of the Mohicans.
Wow. Yeah, you guys chose weird ones.
Yeah, epics. I don't know
why.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, I went through a period where every time I'd come home from a night of drinking, I'd watch Jackie Brown. So I'd watch the opening 30 minutes of that thing more times than I can count.
Sure.
Things like that. American History X was a big deal.
Oh, God. American History X, to me, still is the best performance that is totally overlooked by so many people.
Reversal of Fortune, which was earlier in the 90s, and I was still in Refurio, but I remember really enjoying that.
Mm-hmm.
Chasing Amy, of course. The Professional.
Professional shit.
Lone Star, because part of it was filmed in Eagle Pass, and that movie is excellent. Very underrated.
Yes, uh-huh.
Sales
was on.
And, of course, Waiting for Guffman.
Oh, Guffman. I remember reading, sitting at Friday Beer, which the group that I was in would do, back when it didn't suck being young, where now, like, if you're in college, there are so many rules on things. We had... In this group that I was with, we had an event every Friday called Friday Beer, where we would go and drink beer at the Posse. To the point, it was so much a thing that a guy actually got money passed through the budget to pay for queso at Friday Beer the whole semester. Couldn't happen now. That could not happen now.
Right.
But it was awesome. And I remember we would sit there and read the reviews of Waiting for Guffman, because the reviews were just as funny. Because you get, like, they have a song called Stool Boom. Oh my God, that's amazing. Right. That was one that when I saw in the theater, I was like, I find this hilarious now, and in 15 years I'm going to find it just as hilarious as I do at this moment.
And here we are.
And in a lot of ways, Best in Show and A Mighty Wind captured a lot of that, but it always felt more forced than what I got in Guffman.
I think A Mighty Wind is a true show of it being forced.
Uh-huh.
Best in Show still holds up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as, like, gut-wrenchingly funny as Waiting for Guffman, but it's more of a chuckle funny.
Yeah. Well, Chris Guest's Corky St. Clair is a character that he's had forever.
Mm-hmm.
He first popped up on Saturday Night Live as the men's synchronized swimming coach.
I'm not the strongest swimmer.
Yeah, I'm not a very strong swimmer. I did a little regional theater, a little Shakespeare in the Park. If I ever do that again, I might just kill myself with Cuisinart. But that had more genuine falling out of my chair laughing moments.
And it was the first time that they gathered that particular ensemble that would go on to make all the other things.
But they also had people like the guy who was in, was it Bentley from the Jeffersons? Who was it? Oh, yeah, I enjoyed the show. I'll take this balloon home with my granddaughter. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just as God made me, sir. he was so great. And and he just pops up in that little part and is amazing.
Yeah.
The fact that they were able to work the American flag, the Africa hat in near the end. I mean, the songs were great. And it was one where it didn't feel like they were just trying to crack each other up. It seemed like everything they did was genuinely funny.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you got later, like, A Mighty Wind, I like it, but you could tell that they were trying to match on that with, oh, yeah, there wasn't even a record. There wasn't even a hole in the middle of the record. But, boy, if you got one there, you'd have a good time.
Yeah.
It was funny, but it was obvious that they were trying to crack each other up, whereas everything in Guffman felt organic.
Yeah.
And felt like you it was like when we used to do improv all the time, and I did a lot more improv than anyone.
Yeah.
I was all over it. But we would develop characters that we could bring back over and over again in them, and you'd come up with things that were like, this is what they would say.
Right.
Like when Corky St. Clair said, because you people are bastard people, or I hate you, and I hate your ass face. And it's not ass face, it's ass face kind of right. rushes the second part. That's what Corky would say in that moment.
Right.
That, if nobody likes eating their, no kid likes to eat lunch at school, but if you've got a remains of the day lunchbox, it just makes it that much easier. And you look at it like, that is stupid and ridiculous, but that is the only fucking sentence that would come out of Corky's mouth at this moment.
Yeah.
And that is so missing from a lot of what's happening in comedy now, is that I am genuinely going to invent a character that has this speech pattern, and you look at it and go, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's precisely what would happen here.
Yeah.
And I still think it has the saddest barbecue scene I've ever seen in my life, when Parker Posey's grilling like the one chicken, like a wing. By herself.
The Dairy Queen.
I don't know what I'd do. And she's going over the menu. We do a lot of, you know, sundaes, shakes, blizzards. A lot of have hunger baskets, hunger busters. We have, and she just
no. I want a hunger buster basket.
I want
now.
A hunger basket.
I do. I want that. I want to wash it down with a corn Julius,
and then go and
have a fucking grand slammage.
Grand slammage.
That's it.
That right there, I really, it's weird because with the 90s, there's so many movies that I love. You get me talking about Waiting for Guffman, and I'm like, shit, that might be my favorite comedy ever. But then you pull up something else, I'm like, well, no, there's that. Shit.
Donnie Brasco.
Brasco.
That's some good stuff.
Pacino was so understated in that I don't even think it was Pacino.
And the laugh riot that was Kids.
Never saw it. My sister actually has
not a good time.
Yeah, the guy who directed Bob Clark he was a photographer before he started doing movies, and he had a book called Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And Clark was like, my sister told me about this. She actually ended up stealing a copy of it from the library at UTSA. Tulsa's really hard to find, but he was kind of raised a photographer. He grew up taking pictures, so it was really automatic. And he started hanging out with people, you know, not hanging out with people, but the group he hung out with slowly started getting into drugs, like heroin and shit like that, heavy drugs. And he, when he was high, he could still take pictures well, in focus, sharp, and all that. Right. And this book just sort of is the pictures,
cool.
It traces the devolving of it all.
Right.
And it got pulled when there's a double, like, face-to-face picture of, like, a pregnant woman shooting up.
Oh, wow.
And then the next frame, a baby in a casket.
Oh.
And the grandparents sued over it and got the book pulled.
Right.
So it's next to impossible to find. And Kids, I just looked at it and I was like, it's like In the Company of Men. I hear how wonderful and great and awesome it is, but I'm like, I have no desire to see it. I don't
it just
need
pisses
to
you
see
off.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I hear is like,
well,
I
Kids
have,
pissed me off a whole lot more.
Yeah,
Company
well,
of
Kids
Men.
Is scary.
Because Company of Men, you can kind of, well, at least in my case, fall back in a real prick mode and ha ha ha. But even then.
Yeah. It's people
go,
being ugly.
Right.
It's
just, but Kids is straight up ugly.
Yeah. Kids are the ugly, the disgusting of that. But hitting college, and especially Austin, because Austin was one of those mecca cities for a while where, you know, we gave birth to what eventually became hipsters.
Yeah, the ill-fated Austin stories on MTV.
Oh, God. I remember that was back when I used to try and do stand-up at Velveeta Room, and show up early and sign up, and they'd be like, oh, the guys from Austin Stories want to do something, so we're going to have to push you back a little bit.
Right.
Okay, great.
I'd like to get my hands on those, actually.
Yeah.
Just to see what the hell.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, it was kind of Austin, but at the same time, it was like, boy, this is about 10 years off, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's weird to describe it because it sounds like I live there. I've lived there for, Jesus, 15 years now. And describing it, what it was when I moved here, I feel like I'm talking about a different place. I feel like I'm talking about a different state. I mean, it was so... And the gradual changes are so much that I think that if you showed me pictures from what Austin looked like when I moved here, I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
The hell is this? Like, my sister came to visit and thought she could drive around, and she got totally turned around because everything was so fucked up.
Yeah.
But this was where I really came into it, you know? And we'd have, you know, Tarantino in town doing his screenings. You'd have Robert Rodriguez going. I went and saw Road Warrior at the Draft House, and Robert Rodriguez was there. Yeah, hey, I edited some trailers for, you know, a trailer for Escape from New York and one for this. I was bored earlier today, so I just pulled them up and edited some new trailers. So check it out. That was amazing. Yeah. It was so cool. But that was kind of...
Where you live now was the hinterlands.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I was in the middle of goddamn nowhere. Yeah. But I looked through this, and, you know, Ace Ventura hit during that time.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Ace Ventura with you.
Laughing, hysterically.
Almost dying. The most I've ever laughed in the theater was when I saw Basketball.
Yeah.
I broke the chair. I literally broke the chair that I was sitting in. I was laughing so hard at that thing. But this, you know, yeah, you. But you also got to see the evolution of people. Like, you know, from swingers to go to the Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And Go featured the part of that 90s culture that I hated the most, the whole raver bullshit. I just... No,
yeah, that was
time
lost
for
on me. But there wasn't... It had its moment.
Blair Witch.
Yeah.
Man, that ubiquitous, inescapable black hole of pop culture bullshit.
Yeah.
And the first time you saw it, it was so cool. But now you realize everyone involved with it is kind of just... Because the directors, they wanted them to do something else, but it's like... Yeah, they've not really written or directed anything.
They've done some other stuff, but nothing hadn't really taken off. But yeah, no.
But I mean, like the movies that I've got listed at the top of my list: Slacker, El Mariachi, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, True Romance, Clerks, Hoop Dreams. Then you get into like Desperado, which is really cool and original until you see The Killer. Then you're like, wow, holy hell, this is shot for shot.
But The Killer didn't have Salma Hayek.
No, oh, wow. Salma Hayek.
Biggity bam.
Holy shit. The funniest, we both have the funniest stories about seeing From Dusk Till Dawn for different reasons. Mm. My friend Ron and I, when Salma Hayek came out and did the dance, we were both, my roommate made fun of us because we were going, oh,
wow.
Oh. Oh. Mmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And your story of that girl just...
Yeah, she wasn't pleased with
turning
that.
And staring a hole into you, and you're like, I'm not taking my eyes
off
this
care.
Fucking screen.
I don't care. What do you want from me?
Yeah. Salma Hayek is not human.
Yeah, not in those days.
Mm-mm. Not now, dude.
Well, no, but I mean...
Yeah, back then it was bolt out of the fucking blue. Yeah.
I mean, you knew it was coming in Dusk Till Dawn, so you kind of prepared yourself. And I had seen it before, so I was kind of working that, too.
Right,
but
Desperado was a blind side.
Desperado was like, okay, shoot, bam. Whoa!
Yep.
What is that?
And had that Portuguese actor, I think Joaquin, whatever, who looks like, to me, I will always describe as the Hispanic Phil Hartman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who is also
about three apples high, too.
Yeah, he was in Clear and Present Danger.
Yeah.
Has Trejo ever looked cooler than he did in Desperado?
No.
With the short hair, cut, not... His face wasn't as rough.
A tattoo of a woman on
his
chest.
He is a tattoo. And although that movie has one line that pisses me off.
Throwing
knives. A tattoo of a woman on his chest. And coins for making phone calls. Yeah, stop the guy who's got the coins.
Yes.
Yes, the guy with the coins, you need to stop and question him as to why he's got the goddamn coins.
The line of that movie that really defines it to me is, "What is the fucking number to the phone in my car?"
Yes. Yeah, Rodriguez, he had so much fucking piss and vinegar in him when he was younger. He was so on fire. And then he got comfortable. 90s was, and I think this is going to sound weird, but it's an angry young man cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the crescendo being Fight Club.
Yeah.
Which, had I
Holy
seen that
shit,
a few
that's
years
perfect.
Earlier,
uh-huh.
Probably not.
Yeah.
A couple of years later, definitely not.
At that
when
yeah.
In that particular time, living in a band house with 17 fucking punk rockers and me just as punk rock as the rest of them,
poor as fuck, yeah, chain smoking and hating everybody with their bourgeois ways.
Yeah, and that's, I was managing a movie theater, hating my life, living alone. My apartment was littered with Nestea Cool cans and fucking chicken pot pies from Marie Callender's and just sadness.
That was perfect. It was perfect for me at the time. I still love that movie. I still own it.
Yeah.
But I don't watch it. I could never watch it with those eyes again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great, but you're glad those days are gone.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, it's like, man, that was a pure time.
You know what it is? It's a scar from a fight. You're able to look at Fight Club and say, oh, man, that night.
That was the difference between seeing that movie and the people I was watching it with.
Yeah, because they wanted to go in the backyard and beat the shit out of each other.
Like,
yeah,
I've never been in a fight. Dude, I have.
Yeah.
It hurts.
I've never been in a fight. I'm 35 years old.
Do you want me to hit you in the nose? Because I'm pretty sure Ed Norton could swing at me now and make a dent, but not then.
Nope. Yeah.
Well, American History X.
Norton. Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't. If you need to feel something, go jog. Because fighting is not.
Yeah.
No. But that movie was.
And that. Perfect. It's weird because if you break the 90s down into definitive eras, the last is Fight Club. That was closing the door on that. And if you look at it, that was the last thing that really embraced the grunge aesthetic a lot. You know, live in the shitty house. Rage Against the Fucking Machine.
Of having absolutely nothing.
And, nihilistic and all that. The middle of it was all Tarantino. And before that, it was
movies for people that don't worry about saving for retirement.
Exactly, yes. And Tarantino was movies for people who like watching a bunch of movies. That was the first director that spoke to me. And then, but to me, the 90s were as much Jackie Chan and Chow Yun-Fat because I got so absorbed into that world. I wish that I knew what I used to know about Hong Kong cinema now, because I was an expert, because to me the 90s were Hong Kong, you know,
and you had the time into that kind of stuff.
Oh, hell yeah.
You didn't have so much in your life
work.
You didn't have a career. We had jobs.
Yes.
You know, they were just things you did to pay the rent and pay for whatever
Sunglass Hut, and
I worked at a fucking 24-hour porn video shop. I worked at the Grave there. I mean, I just had jobs to do whatever. Working at a sandwich shop, playing in a band.
Right.
No responsibilities, none that I could think of.
Yeah.
And you had time to really get sucked into these things. And when I was doing research for this episode, I was looking at all these movies, and I've got a list that I got off of, I don't even remember the source, so forgive me, whoever. But it's 100 films.
Yeah.
With the exception of maybe two, I've seen every one of them.
Damn.
And in many cases, multiple times.
Do a quick read-off, and let's see how many of them I've seen.
Schindler's List.
Yep.
Goodfellas.
Yep.
This is going from one down, obviously.
Go on.
Pulp Fiction, Silence of the Lambs, Fargo, Unforgiven, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Watched it again.
Malcolm X, American Beauty,
Dances
with Wolves, Forrest Gump, Sling Blade, Titanic, Braveheart, Usual Suspects, Reservoir Dogs, Sixth Sense, Barton Fink, which is fucking awesome. Boys in the Hood, JFK, Seven, Dead Man Walking, Toy Story, The Piano, Nightmare Before Christmas, Thin Red Line, The Green Mile, Howard's End, Quiz Show, Terminator 2, Jurassic Park, The Matrix, Ed Wood, Being John Malkovich, also incredible.
Phenomenal,
The Crying Game, no big surprise to anyone that I can think of.
Yeah.
Leaving Las Vegas,
yes.
Also, what a great movie. Magnolia, Remains of the Day, Big Lebowski, Jackie Brown, Shortcuts, The English Patient, L.A. Confidential, Glengarry Glen Ross, Good Will Hunting, The Fugitive, Fight Club, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Wag the Dog, also very underrated.
Mammoth, the shit.
Good shit. Scream, Beauty and the Beast, The Player, also
nice.
Very good movie. Yeah. Dead Man, Mad Dog and Glory, Philadelphia, Rushmore. Scent of a Woman, Shine, Thelma and Louise, Casino, Deconstructing Harry, Age of Innocence, also very good, Godfather Part 3, Shouldn't Have Ever Happened, Sweet Hereafter,
I've
never seen that, The Grifters, Toy Story 2, Lion King, Heat, Breaking the Waves, Secrets and Lies, American History X, The Name of the Father, Groundhog Day, Miller's Crossing, Branagh's Hamlet, Babe, Three Kings, Eyes Wide Shut, Fisher King, Edward Scissorhands, Raise the Red Lantern.
I don't know.
Really good.
Really?
Really fucking
good.
Days of Confused, Donnie Brasco, As Good as It Gets, The Apostle. fucking phenomenal. Princess Mononoke, Out of Sight, Apollo 13, The People versus Larry Flint, not so much. A Few Good Men, Slacker, Boogie Nights, 12 Monkeys, Jerry Maguire, Bob Roberts, also very funny. Last of the Mohicans and Clerks. All but five.
God damn. Yeah, there is a lot of shit coming out in there. It's the 90s are so hard to pin down, man.
Hunt for Red October, too.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ, that's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. And just the top.
Well, and that's
movies.
All that. Remember, that's all we had to do at the time.
That's what I'm saying.
During the 90s, I was watching 2 to 3 movies a day.
Yeah.
A day. You know, I remember watching Mi Familia.
Right.
That's epic and beautiful. But
it's also American Me. Blood in, blood out, which ethnic, I saw a thousand times.
Ethnic film, I guess, where, you know, voices that weren't heard before were starting to get heard. People were expressing identity. It was really good. I mean,
you couldn't make it out of Eagle Pass without being able to quote Blood in, Blood out, by the way.
Yeah. I can imagine not. No. Raise the Red Lantern was about a woman who was taken in as one of the wives of this Chinese, wealthy Chinese man.
Right.
And the Red Lantern had to do with where he was choosing to sleep that night. Huh. Amazing. Yeah. But yeah, that was where I learned the difference.
I'd watch that now. I wouldn't have watched it then. That's why that didn't happen.
Yeah, the difference between Chinese and Hong Kong cinema was so striking to me at the time.
Right.
Hong Kong was so Western. Chinese was so Chinese. But yeah, that was a coming-of-age time, and boy, there was amazing stuff. And I'm so glad to have been a part of this era. Because the 80s, I sort of felt like, as much as I loved it, I was on the outside looking in. The 90s, that's ours.
Yeah.
I mean, that's our time, undoubtedly. Even more than the
2000s. The time when we had the most time.
Yep.
Yeah.
I claim the 90s more than the 2000s.
Oh, 2000s are a blur.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, from the year 2000 on, it's just been
but most of
work.
Most of these movies, if I had to, I could remember the first time I saw them in the theater, you know. I remember seeing Heat, the first two showings of Heat. Desperado, the first two showings of Desperado.
I saw Desperado 8 times in the theater. Because I had nothing else to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked at a burger place.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go see Desperado today.
I was in Austin by myself over the summer, living in the dorm, living in the Dobie, so all I had to do was go down an extra flight of stairs, and I was in a movie theater, working at a video store. Yeah. I mean, shit, I watched so many movies. So many movies during that time. It was amazing. Oh, man, I miss those days.
Had it not been for the 90s and the time I had, I would have. I don't have any business doing this show now, but I really wouldn't.
Yeah,
because I wouldn't not have seen anything.
I wouldn't either, because this was when I was in film school learning all this stuff. Yeah. I mean, this was when I was really picking it up.
The best part is when I was watching all these movies, especially the last half of the 90s. I really thought I knew what I was talking about too, with only the kind of bravado that only a guy at that age would have.
See, the thing is,
I've seen all these movies. I know how to make them.
If you took me back 14 years. To the mid-90s, the shit that I knew then compared to what I know now would blow your mind. You'd be sitting looking at me like, what?
Yeah.
The fuck are you talking about? I was one of those guys for a while. But then you get older and that shit slips by the wayside because you have to dedicate a certain part of your brain to, okay, how do I operate this the software system at work so that I can sell all this shit? How do I operate this so I can,
Can I take money out of my Roth IRA with all these penalties?
Yes.
No, I can't.
Yeah, you can't. Exactly. Oh, man. Speaking of, and now I'm at a point where I'm like, gee, I don't think there's a penalty if I move the money from my Dell retirement fund into my Roth IRA, so I think I'm going to do that.
Exactly.
Because
probably take it out, put it in the CD, better return.
You know what's weird is I actually worked at Dell for 4 years, and I have about, depending on the market, $10,000 in a retirement fund from there. I have a 401k, but the thing is with all the shit, the monkey and that's happened with Dell stuff, it used to be worth a whole lot more.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how things go. But you grow up, you learn. You get a portfolio. You get responsibility. You learn about the savings account instead of just the checking account.
Well, there's a lot more to worry about than just, you know, Friday's beer.
The things you're worried about, where am I going to sleep? Not that you didn't have a home, but am I going to sleep at my place? Or
there was a time in the 90s I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So
where am I going to sleep? Am I, you know, who am I going to wake up with tomorrow?
Yes.
What movie am I going to see? What beer am I going to drink? What fast food restaurant am I going to go to prevent the hangover the next day?
Right.
And then the next week starts, and it's all over again. You don't know who. You don't know where. You don't know
what. I've been up for 3 days.
Yeah. I never had that, really.
That's a lot of coffee.
Yes. That's what I... Well, I guess when you snort...
Winning!
Yeah, winning, duh. That's where during the 90s was when I was going through my straight edge and then started drinking a little bit. Because remember, I was straight edge till I was 22.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, crazy. I wouldn't even take aspirin.
Right.
Till I hit 22.
You need Rollins and Strife records.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But
I remember those days. Dirk used to have like a hoodie and wear his arms in a permanent X.
Yeah.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. It was awesome. But yeah, then you grow up. But these were, that represents, I think.
Major threat. Was his nickname.
Yeah, yeah. I was the bad religion at the time. No. Actually, my nickname was the Sound of White Noise. That's me, the Sound of White Noise. But I look back at the 90s, and I think half of my love of those movies is the fact that I've never been more free than I was when I watched those.
Yeah.
You know, when I was sitting in the theater, when my only concern was, what girl am I going to be able to convince that I'm not repellent enough to perhaps invite me back to sully her room?
Right.
Where am I going to find enough calories to make it through the next day? And am I going to be able to get the 3 hours of sleep that I need to function in class tomorrow?
Right.
God, those were the days. And now I'm like, it's funny because I tell all my students that there's a sacrifice, there's a trade-off. And this, I think, kind of pulls it together nicely. Freedom and security don't work hand in hand all the time.
No.
You sacrifice the security for the freedom. You give up the freedom for security. I mean, that's what you do. You live
and
in
the fruits of both just taste differently at different ages.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
you kind of understand not just the sweetness of freedom, but the sting as well.
Exactly, yeah. And in college, my days were... Yeah, good times. But then once I got out, it was like, what the hell do I do now? And that was when you were hitting like American Beauty, which, even though not great, worked on the whole ennui of that era of a person's life.
Yeah.
But Fight Club, I think, definitely hit that as the more rudderless, like...
That was definitely where I was.
Yeah.
I even then, when American Beauty, even at that point when it came out, I was like, man.
Yeah.
Motherfucker. You got the world by the fucking short hairs, and you're doing this because you just realized it. Chilling out's cool.
Yeah.
And girls are pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, motherfucker. But yeah. Fight Club is like, no, here we're poor and dirty.
And if you look at it, the 90s started, and I think that this might be a good way to pull this all together. The 90s started with Slacker, El Mariachi, Reservoir Dogs, and Clerks that gave you the idea that anything was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was possible. And I think that was partially our age, too, that it's like, wow, I can get together enough money to buy a camera, I can make a movie.
Right.
Everything's possible. And then, by the end of it, you had Fight Club, where it's like, no, there's a reality you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And that as much fun as it would be to go out and do all this shit all the time, the party has to end at some point.
Right.
And, I mean, not to be depressing, it's just true. That's life. You do hit the point where, as Dave Mustaine put so perfectly when he was talking about Decline of Western Civilization, the Metal Years, what once was really cool...
Yeah.
Suddenly became really lame.
Well, when that age, all you see is the dream and not the work.
Exactly.
And later on, you work and dream.
And then you learn that achieving the smaller dream is better than the big dream.
Yeah.
And Fight Club kind of pulled a little bit of that in there. But,
yeah.
You know, it's all worth something. And I think, is that a good place to pull us into a close on this?
I think so.
Yeah. I know this show was all over the place, but honestly, I think this is the best conversation you and I have had in years.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
And what we're saying is that Sling Blade was good.
Yeah.
And Shortcuts was the film of the 90s.
Yes, the film of the 90s. You know, I'm tired of begging for people to join us on Facebook, so I think you're going to do The Office. Don't. I don't even want you to. You can't even exist. If you were to exist on our Facebook page, your children would weep over your melted body because it would just be too intense for you. Sorry. Unless you have Adonis DNA and tiger blood, you can't handle our Facebook
page. I
wouldn't
put your burning body out with an orange Julius.
No, not at all. So deal with that. And maybe check out our webpage while you're at it. Maybe check out the new thing I'm working on, Notebooks on Cinema. Maybe don't. Maybe I won't tell you what it is.
Maybe just watch The Notebook.
Yeah, thefilmthugs.com or thefilmthugs@gmail.com. Do whatever, man. We don't need that.
You think that'll work?
Ennui. All right. Well, thank you for listening. You got anything else to say?
Nothing else to say.
The dream of the 90s is alive with the Film Thugs. Catch y'all later.
Later.
Stop.
right. Thank you very much for joining us on what's probably going to end up being the first of a couple looks at the films of the 90s. Really important decade for both of us and film in general. But musically right now, I think it's appropriate to end with Where's My Mind by the Pixies. You know, the song that ended Fight Club, which kind of signaled the end of the 90s, really. First song was Miserloo by Dick Dale, which was taken off the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. After that, you had Fishbone's Fight the Youth from their album Reality of My Surroundings. Fishbone, a band that could only have existed in the 90s. We began with a clip from the show Portlandia. The Dream of the 90s is Alive in Portland, and it's a hell of a show that you should check out. We also used clips from Pulp Fiction, The Matrix, Dazed and Confused, Groundhog Day, Jackie Brown, Reservoir Dogs, Swingers, Clerks, Fight Club, and The Usual Suspects. Well, thank you for listening. Check us out on Facebook. Email us at thefilmthugs@gmail.com. Check out thefilmthugs.com. All of that good stuff. And join us next week, where I think we might be doing our retrospective of 2010 and a look back at our first year as podcasters. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Stay beautiful.
It's someone's nephew. Don't forget to validate your parking. And for all of you good people in the Midwest, sorry we said fuck so much. Say goodnight.
Thanks again.
Now go. Vanish. You met me at a very strange time in my life.